Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Cloak and Dagger, which aired on Freeform, which used to be ABC Family, so still part of the whole ABC network or whatever. It's done by ABC Studios. It was a 10-episode season, and it had a bit of the kind of Netflix mentality, one story throughout the whole season.
Well, it's funny. It was a very slow burn in how the story was told.
Yes.
We watched it in three bursts, just finished the final two episodes, literally like 5 minutes ago, just finished.
Yep.
But my first thought as I finished was, I think they could have done a solid 2-hour movie to tell the story they divided out into that 10 episodes.
I'm not so sure about that because I felt Cloak and Dagger each had their own arc and we would have had to gloss over a number of things, and we wouldn't have gotten as much about them, how their powers work, their backstory.
True.
I'm not saying it's a full 10 episodes. There was some places where, yeah, they could have sped up the pace, but I felt by the time we got to the end, they'd built up what they needed to for us to understand how everything fit together and whatnot.
The end had the payoff I was hoping for.
Yes.
Someone asked me before we watched the final two episodes if I would recommend the show. And I told them I won't wait until I've seen the final two episodes to see if they land the ending, if the show has the payoff. Because at that point, 8 episodes in, I thought I knew the overarching arc they were telling, but I wasn't convinced I knew.
I did. I would say the earlier episodes were a little slower than I would have liked. And the 9th episode was probably the weakest of the bunch. It wasn't bad, but the part that annoyed me with that is they kept cutting back to a class at Ty's school, at Cloak's school.
With a priest who we knew, and we intellectually we knew the priest was a teacher, but we'd never seen him teach before.
And he's going through the hero's journey, and specifically the part of it where we're at in the story. And I'm like, wow, thank you for explaining where we're at in the story, in case I missed that at the end of last episode. And it went to a metatextual place on a very deep and expository level.
Yeah.
Almost to the point of not quite throwing me out of the story, but kind of.
I felt they were telling me instead of showing me.
Yes. Well, they had already showed us, but now in case we missed the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what's happening to the characters. Let us spell it out for you.
Well, and our limited understanding of that teacher was that he taught history, and now here he is in an English class teaching.
Yes.
So there were a number of things about that frustrated me.
And note how we're continually saying that guy, the priest, as if he has a name. It was given maybe once early on.
Yeah.
And he's from the comics.
Yeah. I mean, we saw him early on. He disappeared for a little while. He came back. He was only used as needed.
Mm-hmm. In the comics, he is much more of a confidant of Cloak and Dagger, historically.
Well, and he was implied to be a confidant of Cloak's, but we didn't honestly see that.
We saw a little of it early on.
A little, and
but they had the time to develop it more.
Well, but there was more of a tension than I thought the genuine confidant relationship would have had. I mean, I get the conflict with your mentor or your confidant type relationship, but it went beyond just that tension for me.
They made a number of changes in these characters from the comics to the show. I mean, they brought in, obviously, Cloak and Dagger. They brought in the priest. They brought in the detective. And they flipped kind of the background of Cloak and Dagger.
I wondered about that.
Because Tyrone was kind of the street hoodlum or whatever, versus here it's Tandy.
Interesting. I wondered.
She had the you know, more upper class background or whatever, although she started that way here. Instead of it being a drug-induced powers, it's now this accident caused by mystical energy or what have you. And Roxxon played a huge, huge part in it. I'm trying to remember if they were a big thing in the comics or not with Roxxon.
Do you remember when the story, like, is it 60s?
80s.
80s, interesting.
They were introduced in Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, or Spectacular Spider-Man, Peter Parker. They've flipped back and forth in different titles over the years. And then they got a bi-monthly solo series for a bit, or paired series, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Then it got combined into Strange Tales with Doctor Strange and then split back out. And all of this in the mid-80s, I'm going to say like 83 to 87, a little late, was their main time. And they showed up a bit later.
The drug aspect was the only aspect that felt kind of 60s mentality to me, especially on Tandy's side. In terms of the parents do it, the kids do it. It's not that big a deal. So to me, it was kind of 60s pot. They just updated the drugs.
It's funny because there was one other character I was thinking, particularly in the last episode, where we kept getting the voiceover telling us of the past major trials and tribulations of New Orleans. Now, it's set in New Orleans versus New York. The comic was set in New York. Moving it to another city makes sense. No problem with that.
And I thought they played it well for New Orleans in terms of bringing in the voodoo to do the mysticism.
And that's the thing. They bring in a schoolmate of Tyrone and her aunt, who's the voodoo person. They have a character called Brother Voodoo.
That's funny.
Even if they had just mentioned that this lady has a brother and give the name or twin brothers or what, you know. That would have been a nice little seed planting, just to, you know. Yeah. But they didn't do that. It was funny.
The history of New Orleans in the final episode, there were times when it worked for me. There were times when, to me, it was just, you're hitting us over the head again. If they had been sprinkling that.
They had sprinkled that out throughout.
A little. They'd done the brothers on the tour.
I felt it was a callback in most cases.
I felt it was a callback in one or two cases. But they gave us like five or six, which is where it was just too much all in one episode.
I don't know. That kind of worked for me because I felt in most of them, oh yeah, we got this story here. We got a little of that story there, a little of that story there. And granted, a lot of it was when Tyrone was doing the tour with the soon-to-be girlfriend. So there were pros and cons on the storytelling stuff. Overall, I thought it was good. Like I said, there were a couple of places I felt they could have sped it up. I thought both Tyrone and Tandy were well-developed characters.
I thought the relationship between them was interesting. Kind of the, you have two reluctant heroes who are forced together and refuse to partner.
They're reluctant partners. They know they have to deal with each other, but they don't flat out refuse. There are other partnerships where there's a much bigger refusal in comics.
And I get that, but it was more like when Tyrone is asking for advice on how to use his powers, how this, that, and the other, Tandy won't answer. There are times when she will, but there are a lot of times where it's, hey, that's your thing. You figure it out.
She's not the most people of persons.
Yes.
But I thought they built that well.
Yes. But that's where I'm saying they didn't. They were refusing to operate as partners.
I did like how in one or two episodes where she's developed her powers, there was one where literally between, you know, one scene and the next, it's developed. But they sold it because it was when she was in the other guy's catatonic state for some period of time.
Yeah.
So they had some clever ways to kind of cheat a little on some of it.
There were aspects of the episode in the catatonic state. Ivan Hess was the character.
Ivan Hess was the character. Tim Kang from The Mentalist was the actor.
Yeah, and he really did some good work on show. I mean, there were some scenes in the catatonic state where I'm like, I don't know what direction you were given, but I don't like it.
There are parts, though, where he's just so happy and up.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's so different than his character on The Mentalist.
Yes, yes.
He did a good job there. I was glad to see him recur.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few other characters that they had set up we'd not see for a bit, but then they'd bring back. Sometimes I don't feel we really always got the payoff. Liam was one of those.
Yeah.
We don't really know where he ended the season at.
Well, what we know is Tandy stole hope from him.
She was starting to.
She got pretty far into it.
I couldn't tell if she had stolen his hope of a good life with her, but presumably she did do it because he winds up robbing her and skipping town, presumably.
Well, and the interesting thing to me was when she was stealing hope, I mean, Was she stealing the specific hope dream that she was looking at, or just hope in general?
I took it as the specific hope and dream.
Interesting.
So it's hard to tell, and I was expecting her, because she did that to Mina.
Yeah.
I was expecting her to go back into Mina's kind of mind, because Dagger has the ability to see somebody's hopes, cloak somebody's fears, and they can kind of go in together and get kind of a mixed bag thing.
Yeah.
So we spent some time almost in the astral plane, if you will, and some of this is out of the comics. It's one of those things. I read a lot of the Cloak and Dagger stuff I read back when it was coming out in the 80s, and while the characters have shown up since, it's always been in kind of a team setting or whatever, and not as much in solo adventures. And certainly what they're basing this on was the stuff back in the 80s. So it's been enough time in kind of dream worlds or whatever, more than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly at the beginning, and part of it may have just been the location of sets they used, it reminded me of first season of Legion.
Yes.
Where, particularly the glass room or whatever they had.
Yeah.
Which is a fairly unique setting. I'm not sure where they shot this versus Legion, but it'd be worth checking.
Yeah, this seemed to be in Louisiana, based on end credit information.
Okay, that makes sense.
But I don't recall for Legion. Yeah, with Mina, she went in and she took Mia's greatest hope from her, and I wanted her to go back and return it.
Yeah, I did too. We get through Tyrone's father and his friends or whatnot, the cloak. And that cloak is very much what he wears in the comics.
We went through a lot of evolution of the concept of the cloak.
Yes, the tarp, the bedsheet, and a few of those things. And never once did they refer to these two as Cloak and Dagger in the show.
True.
But they give us enough to understand why it's named how it's named.
Yeah. I mean, we had references to what's the difference between a cloak and a cape.
Mm-hmm.
If I had Dagger of Light. Yeah.
Yeah. But I liked how they brought in the comic look for the character. For him, the closest we really ever got with Tandy was the younger version of her in the ballerina costume.
Oh, interesting.
Because she had essentially a white leotard with a dagger kind of a cutout, which in the 80s was, you know, fairly risque for a mainstream comic.
Yeah.
The powers are a little different in the comics. They can touch, and he's got kind of dark force powers, which is a thing in the Marvel Universe, where he can not only teleport, but again, as we saw at the end when he kind of consumes Connor or whatever, he can do that, and it's a horrific thing for the people.
I thought the not being able to touch for those two was interesting and well played.
It worked.
It meant that Ty couldn't teleport Tandy somewhere.
Which is one of the things he does a lot in the comics.
Well, he explained them having to run through the fear-infested city and a few things like that.
Well, the other difference is this Dark Force, it's like a hunger for him. And if he doesn't consume, essentially, people's fears or them or whatever, but her light can kind of feed the hunger.
Oh, interesting.
Again, a yin-yang kind of a setup.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely not that here in the show.
It's interesting because they had a clear status quo for these characters. It evolved over the season. And where they left off flipped a lot of that status quo.
Yeah.
Instead of Tandy hanging out in an abandoned church, now it's Tyrone. Tandy's moved back in with her mother. Their life is getting back together.
Yeah.
And the other big difference is based on the finale there, they can touch.
I'm not sold on that.
They were holding hands at the top of the stadium dome or whatever.
Oh, when they were laying side by side. Interesting.
Yeah.
Because in the church, they were making a point of standing 2 feet apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking they were still at the can't touch. I was thinking in the stadium that was still kind of the after effect of absorbing everything.
And it could be.
From the Roxxon thing.
But they've got a second season for this, and I want to see where they go with it. Because I thought they cast really well.
They did. The guy who played Cloak, the character Ty, did a really great job with the body language. It wasn't that he was afraid. He still had a lot of that fearlessness of his childhood, but he was watching his step.
The kid Tyrone did great.
He really did. Yeah.
We start by seeing him in his older brother's hoodie, which just, you know,
swamps him.
It's a tent.
Yeah.
But man, he owns it.
Yeah.
He's like, what are we going to do tonight? You know, and just, and one of the other characters refers to him as always punching above his class kind of a thing. I'm like, yep, I see it.
Yeah.
I thought both the main Tandy and Tyrone and the younger ones they had did a great job. And some of the casting they did for other stuff. This is one of the shows where I felt I recognized more actors from other things than in a lot of the Marvel shows.
Both the moms?
Yeah, Gloria Rubin and Andrea Roth. Mm-hmm. Tim Kang from The Mentalist. And then the detective, O'Reilly, I think it was, she was a Power Ranger. She was the Yellow Dino Thunder Ranger.
First episode she was in, I asked you if she was capable of speech.
She's in the entire second episode, doesn't say a word.
Funny.
She's in it a fair amount, and she's like showing pictures and stuff like that. They did that kind of a thing a lot, because even in the ninth episode, after the police basically aren't doing anything, after, you know, we think this is the guy who killed your son, there was mom's whole tirade or whatever and some other stuff, and they had either music going or something.
Yeah.
You know, as his Ty's beating up one of his teammates on the basketball team or something. Who had it coming?
Yes. One of the things that I felt they never really played on was Ty's mom working at Roxxon.
I was never 100% certain she did.
She seemed to be doing like PR for Roxxon or something.
She did PR for somebody.
Well, she had a Roxxon ID card.
That's right. So, yeah, she was. That's the thing is... We never see her at the Roxxon office identifiably as such. We don't know what her position is there. If we hadn't seen Tandy steal the ID.
Well, we see her holding things with Roxxon letterhead. We see her making little infomercial type things for, you know, I lost my arm serving my country and then I thought I was useless, but Roxxon gave me a way to save the coast.
I didn't take it as her making that.
That was her making that.
Interesting.
Because we had heard her talking on the phone, planning the spot out.
Okay. I knew she was somebody's PR person, but I wasn't sure if it was a politician, the city, or what.
And I couldn't tell if it was a politician or city first until I lined up what she had said they were making with his saying the same type of stuff.
The fact that we never see her having anything to do with this major mining operation or the guy behind the scenes on it.
Yeah.
Well, and there was ample opportunity for it, because imagine the confrontation they could have had between Tandy and Tyrone when Tandy's like, Roxxon destroyed my life and kind of yours too. And oh, by the way, why is your mother hanging out with this guy? He's evil.
Yeah. And your mom is trying to make Roxxon look good to the world.
Or have Tandy basically, all the people in here, they're guilty. I'm going to take him down. And he's like, yeah, but that one's my mom.
Yeah. Well, it was Roxxon Gulf. Yeah. A lot of the buildings. Which to me felt like they were trying to, I don't want to say capitalize, but maybe play on the whole BP oil spill and the Gulf thing. And given they were in New Orleans, that totally makes sense. But I thought it was funny when you were going through the IMDb trivia page and one of the comments was, Roxxon happens to sound a lot like Exxon.
Well, it was also pointing out that Roxxon was seen as a company in the background of all three of the Iron Man movies.
Yes.
But that was Roxxon, not Roxxon Gulf. So in my mind, this is a subsidiary of.
Yes.
But there's enough wiggle room, I guess, is the way to put that.
Well, and a lot of the little Roxxon Gulf, like the guy saying, you know, I got to make my community better by working for Roxxon Gulf, BP did a lot of those types of commercials after the oil spill.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it was kind of a, you know, we found something people could relate to or would resonate with because it was just close enough to reality.
There were definite aspects where they were grounding their story in enough roots of reality to make it believable.
Yeah.
When Ty is asking his mother, why didn't you do anything? And she's pointing out white cop killing a black guy in this day and age, not that big of a deal.
Well, and the only witness was my 8-year-old son.
Yeah.
Did I want to paint a target on my 8-year-old son?
And it's one of those things in the day and age of the living while black kind of problems.
Yeah.
That sort of reaction, unfortunately, makes sense. It shouldn't. It shouldn't have basis in reality, but it does.
And she sold it when he said, you know, I wasn't afraid. And her response was, that was a luxury your father and I didn't have.
Mm-hmm. They did some good stuff. I thought they gave a lot of the actors some good material to work with.
One of the things I felt they actually played off with a nice subtlety was the 8-year anniversary mm-hmm. of Billy and her dad's death when Tandy shows up at Ty's house. And it's kind of the, I don't know what you guys are doing for Billy tonight, but we're doing something to remember my dad.
Well, particularly after seeing Ty's family at breakfast and just how stressed and awkward that was.
Stressed, awkward. I would almost go so far as to say shut down.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of they just don't talk about it, especially on that day.
There was an elephant in the room and they all knew it and couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
And I get it.
Well, yeah, definitely. It was too... families having different approaches mm-hmm. to dealing with that anniversary. And when Ty's saying, yeah, we don't do anything, and she's saying, then you're more than welcome not only to come to what we do, but to remember your brother at what we do for my father.
Well, and it was kind of bringing Ty into her family.
Yeah, it was a softening of Tandy, an opening of Tandy.
Yes, but I also love when he's like, you can't come in when she's at the door. Oh, parents love me.
Yes, yes.
The actress did a great job pulling off those kinds of scenes throughout.
She did. Well, but it was one of the first moments where that street-hardened Tandy was getting some cracks in the shell where Ty was concerned.
But it was also playing off how that street-hardened Tandy was a bit of a chameleon and could fit where needed to be.
Yes.
Because we'd seen her at the ballet already. We'd seen her dressing up as a schoolgirl, fitting into different the internship.
And the internship was priceless. But we should acknowledge when she went to Ty's place and showed up at breakfast, it's not like she was there purely for Ty.
No.
Because that was when she stole Mom's ID for Roxanne.
The only time we saw her do something that was not incredibly just solely for her was really, I would say, at the very end when she's bringing a care package.
Yeah.
And Ty's like, what are you doing? When did you start caring? She's like, I'm learning.
Yeah.
And again, she pulled the line.
Yeah, but she does quite a few things that definitely are for her, but she acknowledges will help others too.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting Ivan Hess out of the catatonic state. She seems to reach a point where she realizes not only can they step in and get the information she needs, but pulling him out will help Mina. And as a daughter, she gets that.
I hear what you're saying, but for me, she hasn't crossed that line. She's right on that line.
Oh, she was. Definitely right on that line.
Because the minute she could talk to her dad, she stayed.
She did. And Ty was the one who pushed her over into realizing it wasn't really her dad. But she... Again, she stayed long enough to get Ivan out instead of just giving up and leaving Ivan there.
It's funny because there are times where Ty is clearly the smarter problem solver of the two.
And the moral compass.
It was certainly the moral compass. But there are, throughout the whole thing, she is the more clever, the more analytical, the more strategic.
The advice she gives him at times are hilarious mm-hmm. in terms of, if you want to walk into a police station and not be seen as a black thug, then you need to go in as a victim.
Give him a story. Here's con artist 101 type stuff.
Yeah.
And particularly when Tandy and Liam are robbing the wedding reception.
Yeah.
I mean, when she's breaking down, here are the marks, here's what we're going to do, here's how it's going to go. They played that well.
They did. Yeah.
So I think overall, while it was a little slow in places, the writing was solid.
Yeah.
The fact that they could go through some scenes without dialogue and they could have a character go without dialogue for an episode. That's not easy to do.
True.
That takes a little skill. Whether they should have or not, you could argue either way on that.
Well, and I mean, the rig, whether it was oil rig, power rig, whatever I'm supposed to call it, out in the Gulf, that rig was kind of the arc of the season for mm-hmm. me.
That was Tandy's arc of the season. I still think...
Billy?
It started the Billy storyline, getting the guy who killed Billy, and you could argue if that's resolved or not, because I'm going to say it's not, really.
But to me, that was all part and parcel of the rig. If the rig hadn't exploded, would Billy have died? We don't know.
I think so. I think it could have just as easily been, and I have a hard time imagining Billy having gotten out of that situation alive if the rig hadn't exploded.
Me too.
So, I liked how, though, She was trying to clear her father's name, and he was trying to incriminate the guy who killed his brother.
Yes.
Flip sides of the same sort of coin.
Yeah.
And we got solid movement on both.
Yeah. Well, and he was always looking for justice. It was interesting to watch her kind of waver in terms of there's no justice to be had. Can you clear dad's name and get that as your justice versus people throw money at you and that resolves the problem?
But if you go back to that 8 years ago moment with the rig, it was a bad day for both of them.
Oh, it was.
But it had much more serious ramifications for her than for him. Her entire life was destroyed.
Well, and one of the things I felt that they alluded to, but they never gave me a solid backstory on, was that day was a turning point for his life, but his life got better. It motivated his mom to get them out of the ward they were living in the mid-city, to make a move to a better job, to pull their family up, to not be satisfied with where they were at.
Both families went through a tragedy. One was able to use it to motivate and overcome, and the other not so much.
Yeah.
Difference also between a child dying and the breadwinner of the family dying.
Definitely. And not only the breadwinner of the family dying, but the company the breadwinner worked for coming after you.
Yes. It made sense for the two to be tied in together storyline-wise. The thing that I would like to see a little bit more clarity on is we see finally in the finale they've been drilling or whatever for this energy.
Yeah.
That's what's powering Cloak and Dagger. But there's more to it than just raw energy. There's almost some sort of sentience. Because Cloak, throughout, is either where he wants to be or where he should be kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit more guiding force for him than for her, I think.
Definitely.
But there was in the comic, a character called Despair that they take on, they get aspects of, which is how their powers come to be. And here they did all but say, yes, there is this mystical entity that they're drawing power from.
Well, and Ty, when he touched people, they seemed to be aware, disoriented by, at least.
Slightly traumatized.
Yeah. You know, that effect he had. For the longest time, Tandy didn't seem to be having that effect on people. When she took their hopes,
mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Well, the only person who was aware of being in a vision with her that wasn't also simultaneously in with Ty, because I think that different rules there, was Evita.
Yes.
And they need to give a little explanation as to what made her special.
I think they chalk that up to the voodoo nature. Kind of the, she's a voodoo priestess in training.
We never really saw her in training. We saw her having her aunt do readings. We saw her giving tours. She's hung around the voodoo stuff.
Well, her aunt was clearly kind of lecturing her on what to be looking for. Ty is part of this divine pairing. You have to find the other half of the pairing. She has an awareness.
She has an awareness, but how did that awareness get to the level where she could push Tandy out?
Yeah.
There are a few things like that that, again, could have been explained better. It wasn't a problem. I enjoyed the story. I think this was actually one of the better Marvel shows.
Well, for me, one of the things I liked was, and it played off of the they couldn't touch, was you weren't sitting there waiting for, oh, okay, fine, when are they going to fall in love, have their first kiss, blah, 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 because they can't touch. Mm-hmm. That's not where this story is going. You know, Tandy had her messed up relationship with Liam. And it was interesting when we got his hope at the wedding reception, because up until then, I was pretty sure he wasn't just using her, but wasn't positive.
That was definitely where it became crystal clear he wasn't going to abandon her almost no matter what she did. And it went from is he using her to is she using him.
Yeah.
And really that vision of his hope of a happy life with her scared her off.
Yeah.
So it was... I don't know if I want him to return next season. I don't think we need him. But I think there's stuff they could do for an episode with him.
Yeah.
And if they do it later in the season, after she's had a chance to grow a little bit more, she could realize she kind of messed him up.
Well, I was going to say, the person that I do want to come back and that can serve that purpose is Mina.
I think Mina and her father should be back next season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that provides a growth curve for Tandy to... to give Mina back her hope or whatever, realize what a difference that does make, because maybe Mina's in a little bit of a funk or whatever and can't get through that.
Well, she doesn't have enough cardamom cookies.
Whatever. But after going through that and getting a little ways past that, then have Liam come back. And she realized, wow, she really did do a number on him. And is now on a point to feel bad about that.
Yeah.
So, because the cop's clearly going to come back.
Yeah.
Which I'm good with.
On the one hand, I'm good with. On the other hand, I'm not thrilled with where they left her. It didn't make sense to me.
They've got to explain.
Yeah.
She appeared to die after having maybe been infected, maybe not. It was unclear. And we know she survives. That's about all. And has glowy eye type stuff, which is never good.
No.
In the comic, she went through a similar sort of drug thing that Cloak and Dagger did and wound up having powers of sorts. I think Mayhem was the name of the character, which, even though I am sure I've read the appearances of the character, doesn't really ring any bells. Of course, that was back in probably the 80s or the 90s.
Way back last century.
I go through like 2,000 or 3,000 comics a year, so it's many, many comics ago. But the actress, again, I knew from Power Rangers and such. So, and I thought sometimes they gave her better material than other episodes.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I would say the character that got the best end of the script really was Tandy.
Yeah.
Ty came in second place.
I had a feeling that he was going to end up kind of physically where he ended up. I was surprised Tandy went home.
Yeah.
I was surprised they got her to that place. At the beginning of the season, I didn't see that coming.
The arc that I felt they dropped the ball on was her mother.
Yes.
Because mom's doing better after the boyfriend gets killed.
Yeah.
But there's no funeral for him. Mom doesn't even seem necessarily be aware that he did die.
Yeah.
How did she get better? Why did she get better? What happened there?
Well, she was doing better starting a bit before he died. After the money and drugs got stolen, and kind of right before Tandy started working at his office, Mom started doing better.
Yeah.
It was like he and Mom both got their act together when she caught them with the ballet bag.
That's fair. That's fair.
And then Mom had a little relapse the night he died, actually, because she broke up with him. And whether his death scared her straight or what, we don't know. But she seems to have stayed straight.
Seems to have. It would have been nice to get a little more clarity there.
Yeah, I agree.
It's one of those things that I think if they'd sped up a little at the beginning, trimmed a little fat. I mean, it's funny because it's not like one or two of the other shows where I felt there have been parts of scenes that just didn't add up and you could have just yanked. Here, all the scenes were pretty much needed. I didn't feel that they were noodling with them of just, okay, here's a minute or two that you could have literally cut. I think it just was slow.
Yeah.
So if they'd sped up the tempo just a hair on some of this stuff.
Yeah, it was just a very slow burn of a show.
But not in a it's padded and it's wasting time kind of way?
Well, going to the basketball game that was, what, the championship game, I guess? There was a lot of stuff that we were getting through the fear touch of, you know, Ty's getting information through the fear touch. He's aware that something's going on with the ref. And the ref is kind of throwing the game to his team's benefit. The players on the other team are terrified and abused. And he's being given foul shots he shouldn't be given. The game's being kept close when it shouldn't be. And he misses the last shot and lets the other team win.
Mm-hmm.
And we never get an actual, why was the game being thrown? Why was the ref being threatened?
It implied that before, when he was on the wrong end of the ref at the beginning of the show, that maybe somebody's fixing games for these high school things and there's another storyline to be had there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we weren't even being shown someone in the cheering crowd who was kind of the common thread behind all of this that was betting on the games or something.
If there'd been some kind of a subplot that we overhear at the cops or whatever of, you know, they're making money off the high school games or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing where I think the writing, if they'd had either a little more time or a second pass or something, they could have tightened up and really had the thing working just on multiple levels, that the more you dig into, wow, there was almost this whole behind-the-scenes kind of story going that we get, and if you don't notice, you don't notice, but...
Yeah.
And maybe if we rewatched, we'd pick more up on it. Maybe it's there. I doubt it, but it could be.
Well, because to me, it was clear Ty was picking up that the game was fixed and that people were going to get hurt. And he didn't want to win a game he hadn't earned the win on.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't concerned about making sure people didn't get hurt, because it looked like those people were going to get hurt if they lost.
I took a lot of that as he's learning a little more about his powers, and there's the almost quid pro quo with Tandy.
That was interesting, too.
I mean, when he winds up at halftime over where she's at the ballet. That was funny. Yeah.
That was at the Roxanne party.
Oh, the Roxanne party. You're right. Yeah. Sorry, I confused him.
That was funny, though.
The guy who attacked her after the ballet, though, that just kind of drops off at one point. There's no ramifications. Well,
he refuses to say that it was her and to fess up. O'Reilly is the cop who comes into the hospital room to investigate.
Well, once O'Reilly gets shut down by Connor, that's the end of that plot line.
Yeah. Well, but in the hospital room, he says he has an uncle who knows someone powerful in the police force.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the case will get solved the way my family wants it solved.
Yeah.
And then Connors brings her the ID with somebody confessed. And she tells Tandy point blank, she calls her and says, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you come forward and say you were attacked, I can't make this go through.
Yeah. It definitely went towards the cops there are corrupt.
It went towards that, and it went towards part of why O'Reilly decided to go after Connors.
And why Tyrone could trust O'Reilly.
Yes.
So, I mean, they had multiple threads. They tied them together reasonably well. There are still a few loose things here and there, which is fine. I thought this was, again, fairly entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
It picked up a little more as it went on. It did start a little slow.
First two or three episodes in, I wasn't sure what arc we were going to get.
True. I would agree with that. But I think there was a turning point third or fourth episode where it still wasn't crystal clear, but we could at least see the trajectory. We'd gotten enough things tying together. And the first two episodes, I think, aired on the same night.
Interesting. Yeah. It definitely felt like it was written to be binge-watched.
Yes, even though it was released episodically.
Yeah.
I think if they can learn a little from what worked, what didn't on the first season, if they've got a solid game plan for the second season, hopefully both those will be true, I think they'll have a fairly good second season.
Yeah.
I think they've figured out kind of where they want to go. They've set up the characters. It's just what is the next arc for these two.
Yeah, and that will be interesting. I mean, whether or not Tandy was acknowledging it, she got offered a job at Roxanne.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be interesting if she wants that even.
Well, I mean, they could go with the arc of her life and family stuff is finally starting to align. She's getting to a happy place. His life is getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
So we'll see what direction they go. Again, 10 episodes. We watched it in four episode, two episode blocks. If we had really wanted to, because these things were around 45 minutes apiece, we probably could have binged watched it in a single day.
Yeah.
Would have been a long day. That's why we didn't do that. We did it on two evenings and a weekend afternoon. So it's not that much time to invest in terms of, it's less time than, say, a Netflix Marvel show.
Each episode was very satisfying. Mm-hmm. And ended at a good point. It's not like a lot of the Netflix shows particularly that end with I feel like I'm being baited into the next episode.
Yeah, this one ended on a reveal on a story beat or something that felt like end of chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I know there's more. Yes, I want to know what's more, but not crap, you've left me hanging.
Yeah, exactly. I was very satisfied at the end of each episode.
Yeah, they did a good job on that.
Yeah.
So I recommend it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I want to know more about each character, and next season I want to see them teaching each other what they've learned about their powers and seeing what that helps the other learn about their own.
I would expect next season to see the two in the church training each other periodically.
Well, and I would like for Ty, for Cloak, to take Tandy to the priest now that he knows the priest's burden.
Mm.
Now that he, because when he left that last time with that, I'm sorry, which was very much to me an apology for the things he had said of, you can't understand yes. how I feel, etc.
He realized the priest had a frame of reference.
Yeah, you know, but if he can bring Tandy in to help the priest as that apology, and I think that would bring the priest into both their lives together. I think it could be good.
Yeah, the trick is if Tyrone's kind of on the run from the cops, where he clearly is.
I think he can send Tandy to the priest.
And could be the priest is the intermediary to the parents.
Yeah.
Not that Ty can't just teleport, but, you know, hey.
I did like when the mom heard a sound upstairs when the police were downstairs, and she casually walked upstairs and saw the signs that he had packed a bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She played that really well.
Again, should be a fun second season.
Yeah, I agree.
So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.